Hello, dear listeners. I'm just popping in at the beginning of the show here to let you know, if you didn't hear already, the news that Wilf, Mbanga, Alexi and Linda's dear cat and frequent guest on the podcast passed away on Monday, unfortunately, really sadly. I'm so glad I knew the guy and he will be much missed. Why am I telling you this? Because it is not addressed during this week's podcast, as this podcast was recorded the day before live at the Museum of Comedy. It was recorded on the Sunday, Wilf passed on the Monday. In case you're a follower of our Instagram or Patreon and are wondering why we're not mentioning such colossal news, well, this podcast was recorded before Wilf sadly passed away. And just to let you know, the first minute or so of the podcast, there's a few audio issues down to the recording and memory cards, blah, blah. But that's only in the first minute of the show. And you probably won't notice because I'm such a good editor. All right, let's get to it. Enjoy the show. Bye.
It is Sunday the 17th. Are we recording, Jimmy? Thank you. It's Sunday, the 17th of August. You're at the Museum of Comedy, and you're about to watch the Alexi Sale podcast live. Please welcome to the stage, Alexi Sale!
Sit down, please.
What you gonna do with Alex?
Hi, Lex.
Hi, Talal. Makabaki Falek.
Alhamdulillah, Habibi. It's episode 95. I forgot to mention that at the top. 95 of the pod. We're approaching 100.
Hey.
You proud of us?
Well, proud. I don't know if that's the word. I don't know.
It's taken us like 3 years to get there, which is like we shouldn't be proud at all.
It's just surprise. It's just some shit we did. I mean, yeah. It's not like I don't know. It breaks reputations on the left. I mean, I think certainly that, you know, it what? Starts careers and ends careers. I think we're a powerful, powerful force on the left, and they're all scrambling to get on board with the Alexi Sale podcast.
That's right.
All the people from your party.
Yeah.
Have you heard anything from them since you signed up?
I didn't have an email.
Fucking dicky bed.
Yeah. I had an email.
Have you had one email?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, fine. Great. Yeah.
Are you going to go to the conference?
Oh, yeah. I think I might do. Yeah.
Is it just a naming ceremony? What?
I don't know what it's going to be like. I don't think anybody does at this point, really.
Yeah.
I'm because it spawned our other. Well, yeah, because the podcast. Yeah, no, it's really. I feel tremendously pleased with myself that I am in the still contemporary and doing something that's relevant and contemporary. And the obviously the videos, dance videos, which are now hitting 7 million views. 9% of those are in the Philippines.
A lot of South America.
Yeah. So what? Fuck knows what it means, but I just feel a tremendous kind of sense of arrogance about how well they've done, really. So you know, I'm like,
What was the experience like? Well, you went on Mark Steele's podcast, and that's like proper, isn't it?
He had a studio.
Yeah, like nice mics.
He's got a studio, and yeah.
Did you go around looking around, going, why doesn't Talal do this for me? Did you have any
I don't know. Actually, it's a good point. Well, I don't know. How does he make the money to afford? studio because we don't make fuck all out of this. So.
Yeah.
So that's Linda is particularly annoyed about that. So so.
And I'm reaping all the benefits.
Yes.
I don't know.
Yeah, like that was that woman who Florence Foyner, Joyner Griffith, the one who used to put on operas and couldn't sing. You're not paying those people in the Philippines, I see, to watch me dance videos.
I think he must have an advertiser, right? A sponsor.
I suppose he does, maybe. I don't know. We should find out. After 95 videos, we should find out.
But yeah.
We do all right on the Patreon, don't we? And I do. I did always like that when we started out. We got the gold membership on the Patreon, which gets you nothing. Platinum, which also entitles you to nada. Mm-hmm. And like, super gold membership, which entitles you to niente.
Yeah. And that's growing really nicely, actually. And I
do love that idea that you get fucking absolutely nothing for you. It's apart funny. From paying for you, I suppose.
And I have been asking for less money off you guys because of the Patreon.
Yeah.
Let's not talk about this stuff on stage anymore. What were you doing yesterday, Lex?
Yesterday?
Weren't you like talking to some people in a park?
Oh, yeah. I went to, yesterday I went to the Filton 24 1 year in jail. So these are these are mostly the parents of Palestine action activists. You have to keep thinking what you can legally say.
A minefield, yeah.
The Palestine action activists who've been jailed for over a year and not even been tried. And I think, that's really, you think about how authoritarian and repressive that these people have committed no violent crime whatsoever, committed criminal damage at best and have been held for over a year on remand. And it is, I suppose these lines are crossed, slowly, really, but they are, I think you're allowed to say that also that the prescription of Palestine action is a bag of shite.
But let me clarify, we're not
supporting. Thank you. Yes,
thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. We're not supporting any terrorist organizations.
No,
we are against keeping people prisoner without trial.
Yeah, and also, yeah. So I think you can say that the prescription of Palestine action is wrong, and so I went yesterday. They were having a kind of celebration just 1 year in prison and their friends' speeches, choirs, and it was very sweet. But and I'm not really knocking them, but I got me kung fu, me tai chi class from 11:30 to 12:30.
Yeah, you were wearing.
You've seen the footage. Yeah, yeah. So got me tai chi pants on, and. But me and my friend Steve, we actually made the class finish well on time. We deprived everybody about 15 minutes of class because we made it finish on time. And so we belted over there, and I was due to finish at 1, and I was going to be the last performer. If I had finished, I would have been there about 3:30. It was very meandering and just, it just went on, it did. And nobody stuck to time and it was fine. So I just threw a tremendous wobbler, of course, and said, well, I can't hang around until 3:00. You just have to take some bereaved mothers are just going to have to give way. Some mothers whose children have been locked up for a year and they haven't seen them, they're clearly going to have to give way and let me speak instead. So I managed to get on about 2. Yeah.
You did an interesting speech. Do you want to give an abridged
version? One of the things I'm kind of feeling my way towards, in a sense, is that, is to try and find a way to take part in political meetings. Generally when I've given speeches before, they've, because kind of irony doesn't work in terms of a political speech. So that people want a kind of, just want that kind of shouty thing. So the few times when I've given speeches, they really haven't worked very well at all. But I'm trying to find a way to sort of actually do that, to become a kind of a fixture on, you know, a political meetings. But to say something different to, you know, you can imagine what people were talking about at Filton 24 thing.
Yeah.
But it's to try and do something more interesting, really, to develop as a kind of side. It's not comedy, but it's not just a kind of a flat speech. And so the speech that I gave yesterday was partly that I just said that I'd found this thing on the internet that somebody said that we needed a couple of new verbs in the English language, and they would be to stammer and to lammy. And this to stammer and to lammy is to issue kind of completely hollow weasel words, you know, kind of sanctimonious expressions of horror, you know, as a kind of mask for not doing anything.
Yeah.
So you would say that, like, Ursula von der Leyen stammered and lammied her way through a speech in which she, you know, condemned bullshit and blah blah blah. So that went down. Actually, went down better there than it has here. And I was in a fucking field next to the Imperial War Museum. So, So maybe I would have to rethink this whole career making speeches. But then I also said that I would like to try and add my own. Kind of to this debate, so I would like add a noun. I think it was I got a bit worried when I said a noun, because I got grade 4 English grammar, but my punctuation and stuff, it was a noun. Okay. I just said that a noun would be an Yvette, and an Yvette would be somebody whose face revealed their kind of moral bankruptcy and their. Their stupidity and their vile, sanctimonious kind of greed. And so you said to use it in a phrase, you know, you would say, Jimmy Carr, for example, is a real Yvette. So I said that, but then I also talked about, which is a variation of what I've said a few times, I have been thinking a lot about myths and folklore, you know, and there's... myths are a way, folklore are a way for the way that we, you know, throughout history, the wisdom of the ages is passed on through myths and folklore. You know, for example, you've got the myth of Sisyphus. Sisyphus was a man who so offended the gods by finding eternal life that they condemned him eternally to roll a rock up a hill, and then it would roll.
Back down
again. And that, you know, that clearly has significance for us in the modern world. It tells us what it's like to manage a branch of Nando's.
Okay, I wasn't expecting that. Good.
Yeah. So what's the other one? There's a Nando's in our precinct in the Brunswick. There's a Nando's. There's also a Slim Chickens. It's always full of fucking coppers.
Oh, yeah.
They fucking love that. Slim Chickens. Fucking. It's full of fucking coppers.
They're trying to break the stereotype.
They fucking love that Slim Chicken. They never go in Nando's, though, so you're all right.
So they've got smarts.
I've been thinking about the myth of from German mythology, the myth of Dr. Faustus. You know, Faustus is a man who's in power. He sells his soul to the devil.
Mm.
Mephistopheles, the devil's messenger, people like people like Starmer and Lammy and Cooper. That they are people who've, you know, what we would call our soul, I think, is our humanity, our empathy, you know, our, Human Decency, and they have sold their soul to the devil in this case, which in this case is, you know, the Israeli lobby, Elbit Systems, the security establishment, you know, so people like, yeah, Nando's. Yeah. And I just, you know, so I just said that. Clearly, yeah, it works better as a speech than it does in here.
No, it's all and, it's interesting.
Yeah, so, and then I just said, I improvised. I just said, so I was kind of, I said, you know, and I, so they've sold their soul to the devil. And I hope that, you know, I hope that they all go to hell. And that Mephistopheles, you know, they meet Mephistopheles in person, really. And, you know, so. And that was my speech.
What can we learn from the myth of, like, when Zeus fucked that goat? What do we learn?
That's not
from that?
Something you just saw on the internet.
Oh yeah. Sorry. Yeah, my mistake. I was a parody.
You gotta stop that Pornhub. What the? No,
Pornhub. No.
No. Well, I mean, they do. I mean, myths. So, I mean, I'm interested in. You know, yeah, I'm interested. Yeah, myths and legends. They are a way that
love
we,
a myth, me.
Yeah.
Norse myths.
No, yeah. I remember we did
goats.
Remember, I think it was in school, quite early on in school. It must have been in secondary school, but we did the Norse myths, and then at the end, the goodies lose, don't they? Because Loki wins. What is it, Linda?
Ragnarok.
Oh. Yeah.
Sounds like it.
Well, when they destroyed like Heimdall or whatever.
Yeah. I wasn't expecting that. I didn't.
Nice one, Linda.
I didn't fucking see that coming, you know what I mean? QB, I'm like, what the fuck? This transgresses all the conventional Western storytelling. Ragnarok. Yeah. It's fucked up.
Yeah.
We were all saying to each other.
Tell stories like that to kids anymore.
Don't they not?
No, there's not all the gruesome fairy tales I used to get told as a kid, you know, where like you'd have stark consequences to, you know, bad behavior. Yeah, in my house, but everywhere, you know, like even Roald Dahl was quite grim. Even his stories had quite grim consequences for the characters who slipped up. Whereas now everything's like, oh, don't worry. We'll be fine. I'm sorry. Makes me sick. Makes me fucking sick. You've opened your notebook, I know.
Yeah, I've never done that before, actually. While you were talking, I've brought it on stage, all the other recordings, and never actually looked at it. A woman stopped me on the Hampstead Heath on Friday said, would she mention her organization, which is called MUSO, which is looks after Middle Eastern refugee women from the Middle East. They're called MUSO, so go to, you know.
How much did she pay you for that?
Nothing. She didn't even have a card. She just gave it me on a napkin.
Okay, that sounds good. How are you spelling that? Oh, that's with the EW.
Middle East Women's Society Organization, I think it's
that's
called.
Good.
Yeah. So give that a plug. Now I noticed that it's funny. I don't know whether these things go better when I haven't prepared anything. I think in a way they do. But I noticed that Josie Long, I saw a review of her show.
Love her.
Edinburgh, yeah, friend of the show.
Previous guest of the show.
Yeah. And it's called, I think it's In the Time of Monsters. And I don't know. I don't know whether she references it, but it is a quote from the Italian Marxist Antonio Gramsci, which is a famous quote of his, where he says, "The old world is dying, and the new world is waiting to be born. We are living in a time of monsters," and you know that's never been truer than. Mm. I mean, that's because I was also that's what I was thinking. I mean, I was also thinking about that that phrase, the banality of evil, really, that which comes from Hannah Arendt, who, when Jewish writer, attended the trial of Adolf Eichmann, who was one of the architects of the Final Solution, and was kidnapped by Mossad and was tried in Tel Aviv. But she coined the phrase, the banality of evil, which I think means what people take it to mean, and I think it essentially means that, is that you've got this insignificant man who did these, you know, unbelievably terrible things that he's just a kind of colorless bureaucrat. But yeah, he gets dragged into, not dragged, but he willingly enacts, you know, the murder of 6 million Jews and many millions of other socialists, gay people, etc. So, but another thing I was thinking was, I mean, in the time of Monster, that what you, that when you see people who particularly speak for the genocide, people who speak for Zionism, I mean, they are not, is not the banality of evil. I mean, it's the evil of evil. I mean, it's the full force. I mean, that fucking woman, the mother of the settlers, you know, I mean, her face, I mean, the expression of her face and the laugh, the evil cruel laugh. I mean, she is like a, I mean, she's truly that you would see a, she, you can see that she is evil from space. I mean, and somebody like Alan Dershowitz as well, another advocate for, you know, close friend of Jeffrey Epstein, of course, that he, you know, that you can see is this kind of face of a troll, you know, this really evil, evil. I mean, he should be on Notre Dame Cathedral spouting water, you know, I mean, his face is like this. And so you actually, I mean, there's no banality of evil with those. I don't know what any of this means. I just wrote it down.
There must have been one point where they knew what they were spouting was wrong, but they've just been lifted up and celebrated and encouraged. And it just, to be that evil for so long, it must drive you insane. Because I do see crazy people when I hear them talk.
Yeah.
Like bloodthirsty, crazy, like rabid.
Yeah.
They've not got their sanity to be able to think like that and fucking live with themselves.
They don't, I suppose, yeah. I don't know. It's, but I mean, well, I mean, yes. But they don't know that they're evil. I mean, they don't know that they're, you know, they're just, it's just terrible. We really are living in a time of these people already, you know, just this.
Yeah.
Not Donald Trump as well. I mean, say what you like about Donald Trump, but he doesn't seem, I don't know where that's going. That really.
He doesn't seem.
That really didn't. That really didn't go anywhere at all. I thought something might emerge. You know, you start out on these kind of journeys towards a gag and then it dies.
But look,
it dies on your lips.
Our brilliant, incredible guest on last week's podcast,
yeah,
Dr. Victoria Rose.
Yeah.
What she said about Trump was, almost gave me hope, didn't it? Because like he is such a fickle being who will just switch sides.
They might accidentally, yeah.
He might accidentally do the right thing at some point. So there's always that hope that one day he might go, you know what? Fuck Israel. They're not paying me enough anymore. Like they're not the right crowd to be behind anymore.
Well, let's hope so.
And it's so much power in that fucking guy's hands. Tiny, tiny hands. Doesn't make sense. Tiny, tiny brain, yes. Under a big, big wig.
The other thing I've written down is, after all this
what
about Gramsci and...
What has Alexei written down? What has he written today? Bling!
This is how to do an effective Michael Caine impersonation. What you need to do is, not all the time, but what you need to do is just speaking groups of three. So you say, it works in the age. You're a big man, but you're out of shape. I'll do this for a living. See, and it's a perfect way. Yeah. While we're on the subject, and while I'm spreading my, so you just, all you do is speak in groups of three. And then you always sound like Michael Caine.
Listen, Batman, I'll meet you in a cafe in Italy somewhere when this is all
over.
You're exactly only supposed to blow the bloody
doors off. Exactly.
Geezer. Yeah.
Yeah, this is the thing. This just occurred to me, and this is going to serve you really well. This, because this is, this show is, you learn shit as well as as well as being entertained and confused. Forced to reconsider your life choices for an hour. Yeah. Is, do you know how to allow? Do you know how to imitate a dog barking?
Yeah.
No, you don't.
No, I have no idea.
Well, I don't think you do. Because what you do is you breathe in rather than out.
I know.
You knew that.
I do know this.
All right.
I do this at home and it pisses my girlfriend off. Yeah. It's the same. Yeah, I know this. This is really funny you said that. And it's the same technique General Levy uses in his song, Wicked, Wicked, Jungle is Massive. He goes, Wicked, Wicked, Jungle is Massive. Wicked, Wicked. He's doing the dog, right. Inward dog. Not the downward dog. The inward dog. That's funny, uncanny that you knew that.
How so Michael Caine's dog would go,
bringing it
yeah,
home.
I learned it. I learned it years ago.
And someone once told me to do an impression of Alan Rickman.
Yeah.
You have to pretend that there's a spoon full of soup in your mouth. That's how you do. I'm going to kill you, Harry Potter. That's how you do, Alan Rickman.
That's a thing I learned, and now you know it too.
He's dead.
What?
No!
Very fond of him, Alan. I've
just, yeah, absolutely.
Just got over the pain, and then I thought he was there back for a minute.
No, Alexu. I'm watching you, Alexu.
I didn't know.
Do any other impressions? Never done impressions with
no,
you.
No. Well, I used to, I mean, because I used to do your Mussolini, of course. Your man.
Yeah.
It doesn't work so much with the beard. But there was, remember, I used to do, you probably, like some of you, if you're comedy fans, you'll know this, but I used to, in my live act, I used to do a triple impression, which was, this is all like, if you don't, you know, if you're not in your 70s, it won't mean anything to you, but really, but it was a triple impression of, what was it now? It was George Formby doing the St. Winifred School Choir doing Mussolini, I think. It was like, this was the shit that you could fill for. I filled fucking Nottingham Concert Hall doing this. Fucking 3,000 seat a venue doing this shit. I mean, the bravado was extraordinary. What's it go? Mussolini, we love you. We love you. When you left your home for a wander round Rome, you were hung from a lamppost and shot. Oh, I'll tell you. And George Formby will go, oh, I'm manging from the lamppost.
Fucking hell.
It's a weird from shit. What? Oh, Gracie, that's right. I actually did that. What was Gracie? Sing as we go, and let the world go by. Gracie Fields. What's that? Some other Lancashire halfwit. I said that in Bolton, where she's from, didn't I? I was doing a gig in Bolton. Gracie Fields, sing as we go, and let the world go by. That's going back a bit. I mean, Gracie Fields was somebody who was big before the war and after the war. Yeah. Lancashire Mill Gael, there was also, I see myself as being in a tradition in a sense of, have I told this story before about when I met Arthur Askey?
We've done 95 episodes, mate. Yeah. I don't know. I don't think so.
Arthur Askey was a Liverpool comedian, somebody I admire very much, but very much from the golden age of the kind of musical.
Right.
And I was the BBC Light Entertainment Party, which was where all the stars of BBC gathered. Mm. And Arthur Askey was there one year, and Jim Moy, the head of comedy, Light Entertainment, brought me. He said,
Arthur, he said, you know, this is a young Liverpool comedian, you know, Alexis Sale, you know, and I'd like to introduce you to a great admirer of yours. And Arthur asked, he said, oh, hello, son, you know, what you do? And I said, well, I mean, essentially, it's verbal, what I do. It's partly social commentary, but there's also a kind of satiric element, and there's a physicality which, and he just turned and walked.
Wow, he was funny. Wow. What a legend.
He's fucking well, I didn't blame him.
But you learned something from that encounter. Oh, yeah. He's got a recognizable face. Born in 1900 in fucking Dingle, Liverpool. Is there someone
in the fucking Dingle?
Is there a place called Dingle?
Yeah, it's named when I bought my mother a house. Oh. For which she was spectacularly ungrateful. Spent the rest of her life trying to get her to say thank you once. She used to say, thank you because I bought you this house. She said, you say thank you for all that food I bought you when you were a child. I said, you fucking had to do that.
Yeah.
It's the law.
You would have gone to prison.
I didn't have to buy you a fucking lovely semi. In the south end of Liverpool, you ungrateful fucking bastards.
Alexi!
She go, fuck off, Alexi. Fuck off. towards the end of her life, they used it for the palace, the Kaze, which is a bar in Liverpool owned by Dockers. And they used to carry her in a wheelchair up the stairs to the Palestine Solidarity meetings.
Wow.
Yeah.
What, on your own?
No, they used to carry my mother up. The other old people. You're like Audrey Weiss, the Liverpool pensioners. They used to carry me. I told that story very badly, didn't I? My mother was in a wheelchair and they didn't have any disabled access, which you should have done. So they had to carry my mother up the stairs in a wheelchair. The other old pensioners.
There's a saying in Arabic, la taqulla wala uffin, la emma qu'abuk. And it's like, don't say the word oof to your mum and dad. Don't even say oof to them. Like, respect them. Don't even fucking complain once ever to your mum. But then there's another saying in Arabic. It translated, it says, if you see a blind person, shove them over. you're not more merciful than God. Who do you think you are? Fuck them off. So don't trust any Arabic sayings. It's fucked, isn't it? We're not all saints. You mentioned Nottingham. I'm going to Nottingham in September with my improv team.
Oh, fucking Christ. I'll tell you, I'll repeat this, the first time we were doing this, until out in the dressing room, said, I've got your back. And I said, what? And he said, that's what we say to each other, me and my improv team, we all say to each other, I've got your back. And he said, have you got my back? And I said, fuck no. I'm particularly angry about you getting the biggest laugh with your Arab fucking proverbs. Don't think that went unnoticed. Well, you're being replaced by Robin Ince.
Yeah, right. Well, if you want more laughs like that, come to Nottingham, the Robin Hood International Improv Festival, please.
Oh, dear God, there's a festival. Yeah. Oh, my God. I mean, it's a famous story in show business where... I'm talking about ancient acts from the kind of pre-alternative era of Britain. But there was an act called Mike and Bernie Winters, two brothers. Mike and Bernie Winters. And they're playing, Snorbit's the dog, yeah. And they're playing famously the Glasgow Empire, and which is a notoriously hostile crowd. And so Mike goes out. Is it Mike? Mike was the straight one, was the normal one? Yeah. And Mike goes out and he's doing the patter and he's dying. He's fucking, he's tying on his fucking ass. But he knows Bernie. Like in a few minutes, Bernie sticks his head through the. Bernie's the kind of grotesque looking one. The Bernie sticks his head. Bernie sticks his head through the curtains and goes, ooh, like that. So anyway, so he knows that. He's confident. That's cool. So gets to that point. Bernie sticks his head through the goes, ooh. And he hears his voice. I can't very do a very good Scottish accent, but a voice comes from the stores. He says, oh no, there's two of the cunts. So that's what I'm thinking when I think about your improv festival.
The International Improv Festival is Saturday, 6th of September, 9:30 at the Squire PAC. Come see Arabian Nights Live, please. We're Europe's first Middle Eastern improv team. Thank you.
Oh no, there's two of the cunts.
Oh no, there's eight of the cunts in my case. Sorry. But I was going to ask your advice for Nottingham if you've spent much time there.
I was always big in Nottingham, always sold out the concert. One of the venues that would always sell out first on my tour was Nottingham. Played the concert hall.
Did you manage to get there on the bits of your tour before COVID interrupted it?
I did. You did? Played Nottingham, yeah. I think I did a couple of nights at the... Not the big rooms they used to play. Smaller place, much smaller place. And
nice place, Nottingham.
Yeah, nice town. Well, it's always weird for me. Yeah, nice.
Anyone here from Nottingham? No. No, they're worth asking.
Yeah.
Any Arabs in the crowd?
No.
Obviously not, because no blind people got pushed over on the
on the way in.
On the way in. Clearly not. Nice town. Got no stories about appearing in Nottingham.
See,
don't think.
I did a call out on Instagram for questions for you before we go to the audience. Who's that fat bastard? Come on. We're past that. Who is the nicest Tory?
Now, what's she called? Dominic Grieve. Where did we do that festival with Dominic Grieve?
An improv festival?
At the Scottish Borders, we did an improv.
I got in your head.
Did a literary festival in the Scottish Borders. The Duke of Buccleuch, the largest landowner in Europe, it was a sort of sad, pathetic little man. He used to wander around in his own, he designed his own outfits, which was like a green velvet frock coat and a frilly.
Oh, right. Shirt.
Anyway, but Dominic, it was proper kind of one nation, old fashioned Tory. He was booted out the Conservative Party by Boris Johnson, I think. But we also, because he talked very, he talked very, he had a cat, didn't he? Mr. Wiz. Was it Mr. Wiz's cat?
Yes.
Who he's very fond of.
Fun names.
Oh, yeah, I suppose so. I don't think Dominic Grieve was on the ease and Wiz, I think. Very unlikely.
Hold that slang.
But, he talked very movingly about Mr. Wiz. So we used to call, when we saw him on the telly, we used to say, oh, look, there's Mr. Wiz's dad. he was just sort of, I mean, somebody like him, a one nation Tory, and also somebody who was very, respected the rule of law, is very much to the fucking left of Keir Starmer, for instance, So that is one Tory that I didn't mind, really.
Okay, thanks for your honest answer there.
Yeah.
Someone
asked... He seemed like a decent man, even though he's a Tory.
it can happen, well, I guess.
Yeah.
What's up with... Has anyone... Fabricant's wig.
Oh, I don't know what that's about, yeah.
How can he think that's okay?
I don't know.
You can't have a screw loose, right?
I don't know what he sees in the mirror when he goes out. I don't know, really.
Not that I have... It's wrong to wear a wig, but it... doesn't look at all real at all.
No.
You remind me of when you mentioned Greaves' outfits. I was like, yeah, why can't Fabricant do something like that to make himself stand out instead? Someone asked, when are the Shoreham tickets on sale? We are playing Shoreham, the rope tackle in Shoreham in October. I think the 10th or something.
Yeah.
Or like, well, that might be Liverpool, yeah. But they're not on sale yet. Just keep an eye out. I'm not in charge of that. Shall we get a question from our lovely audience?
Yeah.
It's really nice that you're all here. Thank you so much for coming out to see us. This guy is eager. We'll go to you and then the gentleman with the glasses in the fourth row over there. But first, you're here on the second row.
I like the radio series you did there, Heading of the
Rainbow. Oh, right.
How was that working with Ballard Barkley towards the end of his career?
Ballard Barkley for, as you said, but God, we really are going down the fucking annals of 1930s British repertory theatre. Ballard Barkley, for anybody who doesn't know, was the major, wasn't he, in Fawlty Towers? Maybe today, oh. Fawlty. I don't know. It was a funny thing. I didn't actually write. I mean, it was called Lennon the Rovers. It ran for two series on Radio 4. I didn't write it. It was about Felchester Rovers who were taken over by, became communist. I can't remember why they were communists, but I was Ricky Lennon, and then there was Terry Trotsky who was there. And it was actually before, it was in a time when football wasn't part of the kind of, football was considered a kind of very, kind of déclassé kind of enterprise, really. It was really beyond the pale to talk about football. So it was full of jokes about football and kind of Roy of the Rovers as well in the whichever comic that was in. Mm. It was nice. It was a weird kind of thing to do, written by the late Harry Thompson. And
the question was, how is it working?
Ballard Barkley was fine. I mean, it's I can't remember. He was quite like the kid. I mean, he was quite like the major, really. He wasn't one of them people who strayed very far from his, you know, when he did that part in Fawlty Towers, it wasn't a big stretch for him. Where do you go? Oh, the Palestine cola, yeah. Free Palestine. Who was the? There was the famous commentator who'd been sort of blacklisted. You know, they think it's all over. It is now. He was very nice.
Nigel,
he's famous. No, not.
Why is that? Is that a driver?
Whoops. Yeah, yeah.
Kenneth
Wolstenholme, thank you.
Kenneth Wolstenholme.
He was very nice.
Why was he blacklisted?
I can't remember. Why was he blacklisted? He seemed to be very much out of fashion.
You know everything about him. You only know the name. Oh, the statistics. Okay.
It was fun, really. It was fine. I mean,
Recorded in.
Yeah, the only bastard was Keith Allen, really. You know, all the old timers were. Keith Allen was fine.
Yeah.
I mean,
Is that in Television Centre? You recorded that?
No, we recorded it at the Paris Theatre, the old Paris Theatre on Regent Street, which is gone now. And I remember you used to get tremendous shocks off off all the equipment. That's the thing. For some reason, you get tremendous static electric shocks off all the equipment. I don't know whether that informed my performance at all.
I went to see Kelly. I was at a festival where Kelly Osbourne was playing once.
Yeah.
And people kept chucking bottles of piss and water at her and the band.
She's Sharon Osbourne's daughter.
Yes.
Fair enough then, really.
Yeah. She stopped the band and goes, listen, douchebags, you can't keep throwing water and piss at me. Because, you know, we're going to get electrocuted up here. It's really dangerous. And then it was just like everyone chucking a torrent of water at her. It's sad, but it was fucking funny. Funny as fuck, man. But she did the whole set. She didn't stop.
Oh, she's like
a tenacious cunt.
Yeah.
her dad, a bunch of Zionists as well.
Yeah.
So fuck them. She's a real Yvette.
Callback.
Yeah.
Didn't work.
I was trying to get it. Trying to make it popular.
Yeah.
I promised the gentleman back there. Yes.
Yes. Okay. What should you not do at a box junction?
What should you not do?
It's
at
a driving
box
instructor
junction.
From the Transvaal. You should not enter a box junction unless your exit is clear. Yes. Or overtake on a. Do you know I had? Is that from the video nasty episode?
Yeah, from young ones.
In that episode I was delivered as a parcel. Do you know it was a parcel, which was this. Yeah, oh yeah, you slept in our spare room, didn't you? Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, well, Alex can attest to this. So I had the parcel. I said, oh, can I have that? To the props one. It said yes. So I took it home, like in a cab or something. And then I left it in the spare room because people had come to stay, like you came stay in the middle of the night and you didn't notice it. And then you'd wake up and this be this like this figure. It's true. Yeah.
Here's your can of Palestine drink for asking a question. Pass that back, please. I've got some leftovers of the Palestine drinks. Box Junction. All right. Did you have a question for us?
In the same way as I think
Do you think in the same way that Reform, sorry, I have to repeat it sometimes for the listeners at home.
Right.
Do you, as Reform are going to fuck the Tories over, do you think your party are going to do the same to Labour?
Yeah, I certainly hope so. Yeah, I mean.
I also hope they fuck Reform over as well.
Yeah. It's true that there's, surveys, I think, it's all notional in a sense, but, surveys have shown, that a lot of Reform voters are actually more attracted to Jeremy Corbyn than they are to Keir Starmer. Well, then, everybody.
It's not tricky,
and I was like, I was first, wasn't I? I mean, I'm a bit pissed off now because I was the first one to slag off Keir Starmer, wasn't I?
Yeah.
I mean, I was saying it long before.
Oh, and when we had Jeremy on our podcast, we were berating him to hurry up and start a party all the way back then.
Well, he is.
While he was still in Labour.
Jeremy, yes, well, he takes his time, Jeremy.
But I'm saying you're an innovator and a pioneer.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, hopefully it's got to happen, that there is a massive space opened on the left, really. Fact that 750,000 people have signed up and heard nothing back. Jeremy's on it. Have you had an email? You have one email that way.
I got the email. Oh, look. 800,000. I got an email saying your donation has been processed. An email that says, wow, celebrating themselves reaching 600,000 members within a few days. And one saying, please confirm your email address. So, that's three emails from Mr. Corbyn. No, they could be doing more, right? They should be keeping us in the loop. Don't worry, hold tight.
It's
all happening. Things are happening.
Yeah, but yes, I mean, I'm
old
very
people don't know
really,
how to use emails.
I think one of the interesting things about it as well is from what I've, I attended a meeting of Camden People's Alliance, which will hopefully be the Camden branch of your party, and one of the things that was great was that people understood that you couldn't do politics in the old way, and there was a real determination amongst, and I know that's also true of like Jamie Driscoll up in the Northeast, that there's a real determination that the party has not got to be just a replication of the Labour Party, which is top down, but it's got to be from the bottom up. And I think that that's really, really crucial, really, because it's not going to work if you just replicate all them other political parties.
Yeah.
It has to be new in its structure. And also, one of the impressive things was, it was kept to time, which was really, I know that's like, but it is, one of the techniques that, I suppose political fanatics have used to keep, just kind of normal people out is just to make meeting so fucking boring. Boring. My dad was a trade union official, and all that. You know, right, but all that, refer back to conference, Mr. missed. I mean, it's what's that line about, you know, the, you know, labor, you know, trade unions to bring a composite motion to a knife fight. You know, I mean, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to refer, you know, to the second. I once did, you know, the archive hour on Radio 4, I once did one about trade union conferences. God, it was fucking boring. I thought, fucking shit. So, no, they really, I mean, as opposed to the Filton thing, you see, which was fine because it was different, but they really rattled through it. And I thought, this is really, really crucially important that this meeting,
yeah,
you know, gets shit done very quickly. And so, and Andrew Feinstein himself is a very impressive character, I think.
Alexi, last time we were here, I kind of said I wanted to start just going through your IMDb from the beginning.
Oh, right.
Because we often just fucking tell the same eight stories over and over again.
About terrible films.
Yeah, so why not actually, there's a list of 80 films that you've acted in.
80?
80 films and TV shows. I've been 80.
Oh, TV shows. Go on. I thought ahead of this. I will tell the story today of how I, well, contributed to the death, I might say, of, or maybe of the film director David Lean. it wasn't really. I don't know. It was in the days. You know, I went for an audition. David Lean is very much towards the end of his life. He was supposedly planning to direct Nostromo, the Joseph Conrad novel, and so I went to have a meeting with him about and playing. I can't remember the character, and so I met. I'm a great admirer of David
What
Lean.
Else has David Lean made? What are his big hits?
He's done Lawrence of Arabia.
Okay.
And
my granddad knew
Lawrence of Arabia.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, he was in his camp and stuff. In the Algiers and stuff like that.
Lawrence of Arabia?
Not the Algiers, wherever the fuck they were. My granddad.
Oh, your granddad.
And Lawrence of Arabia were mates. Oh, you thought I said my dad?
Yeah.
No, my mum's dad.
And Dr. Zhivago, of course.
Right,
and,
yes.
And many other great films. Really, classics. Very impressive director, really.
Yes.
And although his passage to India with Laurence Olivier is a... It's Alec Guinness as the Indian guy in... which Sheila really wouldn't be allowed these days, would he? As the Indian guy. So I go and see David Lean, and he says, and then the cast director says, he's up for the character of, we'll call him, I don't know, Malvolio or something. And David Lean says, no, he's, Malvolio's slimy and dishonest. And I said, I can act, you know, I'll act that. You know, you don't have to, you know, nice that you think I'm not slimy and dishonest, but, you know, I'll act it. So anyway, so then I started talking about, how Conrad, you know, because he was actually Polish and English was his second language, about the tradition of, I mean, it's a bit like all the rest of it, it's about the tradition of writers who write in their second language, but, you know, their use of English is actually really innovative because of that distance, you know, and okay. I told you the kind of precision of Conrad's text and I just heard this and he'd fallen asleep. And he would say, you've never had that in an audition, have you?
No.
You've actually put the director to sleep.
Fucked.
And he's like, and me and the casting director just sat there and we didn't know what to do. And so I started laughing and he kind of woke him up. Anyway, I never got the part and he died a few weeks later.
Oh, I've got such a boring thing to say about that. Guillermo del Toro, he's shit at writing in English. I hate his English language films.
He's an actor. He's a director.
Yeah.
Oh, director. Yeah.
Dialogue is all over the shop, but really? His Spanish films are fantastic. All right. I'm going through here.
I feel like we started quite slow and then we peaked in sort of the middle, didn't we, really? And now we've got to get off a big laugh. Your dad was on the telly the other day, wasn't he? Did you see him?
God, yeah, that was weird. She'd never met him before.
Who?
We just walked in and I went to go and have a wee and I got my phone out to get Al Jazeera on to see what had happened that day. And the first thing, I know Rosary.
Ian Williams, yeah. Sorry.
Who's that?
His dad was, when I was, I've known his dad since I was 14. He was the, when we were Maoists, he was the head of, he was our, he was Liverpool's Chewin Lai or Chairman Mao. Ian Williams, the Merseyside Marxist Leninist group. He was our leader.
Oh, wow.
Him and Linda did not get on, did they? Really?
Oh, wow.
I haven't got anything to say about that. All right.
My dad was on telly on Channel 5 the other
day. Oh, your dad, well, he would have known you. He knew Ian. Yeah. You knew Ian Williams, yeah, because he's a friend of Wasim's.
Right.
Your dad would have known his dad. Oh, right.
Fucking hell. So our dads knew each other and our dads knew him.
Yeah.
But we've stuck around.
I'm
his dad got my dad his first ever job, I think.
On the railways?
Yeah.
All right, it's in the Alex show.
My dad
got him a job.
They're so desperate for people, they'll take anybody, yeah. Funny Joe. Sorry, anyway, where were we? Sorry.
Let's take another question if anyone's got one. Right at the front here.
Last Crusade, we've done. Well, we can always cut. Well, we'll cut it. I'll do it for the people in the room. I won't.
Tell us about Last Crusade. Something new, Lexicon.
Well, I haven't got anything new. I've told you. Well, I told you on first.
Harrison's pro-Palestine, I saw.
Is he?
Yesterday. Yeah, he did a really nice speech somewhere.
So when we got into the, my scenes were filmed in Almeria in southern Spain. They said they're filming up in the mountains of the Sierra Nevadas today. Come and meet Harrison and Steven Spielberg, you know, Steven and George. And so we got in the Land Rover and we went all up. I remember there was some gypsies in the Land Rover that were so clearly saying things about me.
With you?
No, you could just tell they were like talking gypsy talk and then laughing and going like... That's just something that came back. Anyway, so we went up in this Land Rover and we got to the location where they were filming the stuff with the tank.
Why were there gypsies in the Land Rover with you?
I don't know.
Was it like a... public Land Rover? What?
No.
Were they part of the film crew?
They were part of the film crew.
Okay.
They must have been, yeah.
Okay.
Drove
up the mountain.
We drove up the mountain. And that, I knew the caterers from, it was lunchtime, I knew the caterers from Gorky Park. And they did, I remember they did a famous pollo con hair. chicken and a sherry gravy. And so I said, hola, Federico. Cuatro porciones de raciones de su pollo con jerez.
Four portions.
Para mí. I had a lot of pollo con jerez.
Hey, man.
And then they said, well, Stephen's still filming, but come up to the mountain to meet him. And that's the other thing that I'd spent a lot of time thinking about what I was going to wear and decided to wear a very light colored tropical gabardine suit. I'm not realizing that Steve Spielberg, for instance, only wears his own merchandising. You know, he's kind of got, you know, Schindler's List baseball cap. But I'd noticed just before I was about to meet Steven Spielberg that I had an enormous stain. I would stand up. I had an enormous brown stain there on my light cream-colored suit. And so I was by a kind of water, a thing with lots of little bottles of water. And I thought, first of all, I threw the water on the stain. I was rubbing at it furiously. And I saw George Lucas was sitting in a canvas chair. And I was going, George Lucas is going. So in the end, I pulled the jacket across the stain and talked to her. Hello, I was like Noel Cowder. Oh, delighted to meet you. Hello, so pleased. And then Harrison Ford said to me, I'm a really big fan of yours, was the first thing he said to me. I thought, what the fuck use is that to me?
There's actually, you've said that so many times.
Yeah,
and I can think of a lot of uses.
I went to the rap party. I actually went to the rap party, and Harrison Ford said to me, he said, hi, Alexi, what are you doing here?
What an asshole! Hall.
It was at the Zoo. No, I think he's just like, what the fuck? We're pathetic. You're only in one fucking scene. Why are you doing? Why are you coming to the fucking rap party? I was saying, well, I want to be, you know, try and become friends with you. But it wasn't. He told some very, so we sat with him at lunch, didn't we? And he told some very amusing, for some reason, he talked solely about Princess Margaret. Told some very funny stories about Princess Margaret.
Did he get stoned on set, Harrison? Did he smoke weed all the time?
Yeah.
I knew it.
Yeah.
He did, even back
didn't
then.
Didn't I ever tell you? Yeah.
What a legend.
Yeah. So those are my
it's pretty good. That we got the other one,
because it is a funny story. Well, before we did the thing, I went to meet Spielberg offered it me, but I went to meet them at this hotel in where they were doing auditions in St. James's. And I was in a room, I just gotta go come in and meet Stephen and George and that. And I was just in a room with all these other people waiting for auditions. Everybody's like looks a bit familiar, but not like and then I realized what they were doing afterwards was they were there's a scene where Indy meets Hitler. And all these people were Hitler impersonators. But and they all carried they had little tobacco tins and stuff, and they put it on.
They'd make a mustache.
Yeah, they had to carry the mustache in like a little tin, and they put it on when they got to do the. But yeah. I'm feeling vaguely uncomfortable in this room for some reason. Yeah.
And you have to walk in, and Steven Spielberg probably asks them, "Go and give us your best Heil then."
Yeah, in the end, I think there was an actor because there's a couple of lines, and they gave it to an actor.
Well, that's the end of the show, guys. It actually is.
Say what I was trying to think of. I was going to say what you like about Hitler, but he was good to his mates. Like Stalin, for instance, he fucking kill anybody. But
yeah,
Hitler was too good to his mates. He kept them around much longer than he should have done, really. Fucking Goebbels. He was obviously fucking shite, you know, useless. So there you go. 2 stars on TripAdvisor for Hitler.
Getting his good side. Well, him and Alan Rickman, both dead now. And that's been our show. Sorry.
Right.
We have to say goodbye, I think. Should we take one more quick sneaky
one? Yeah, fuck it.
Who's got a cheeky sneaky one? Cheeky sneaky question? Anyone?
Somebody back in the darkness.
Yes, please. You're in front of the person behind you, so sorry, person behind you.
Really?
I've never heard you talk about.
No,
that.
It's.
What's your favorite book you've done, written, Alexi?
Of course, when I did the first volume of memoir, I did a reading before it came out. I did a reading at an art center in Crosby, just outside Liverpool. My mother came along and heckled me. she said, "Lies, lies." So lies,
as is her want to do.
She, yeah, no, I mean,
that's kind of her thing.
Yeah, the novels are. Yeah, I mean, they're complicated novels. I mean, the first one, Overtaken, I really like, and I think that's
that
got. Yeah, I think I it's got a really interesting kind of conceit and idea that I don't think I've ever seen.
An original concept and a really nice arc and the story structure was very interesting.
So I'm very proud of
but
that.
But what was really. This Weeping Women of Winchester?
Weeping Women Hotel, it's the second one really, set in sort of Crewe, I think, isn't it?
Crewe, I've never even fucking heard of this one.
I don't know. I haven't read it actually. I haven't read it for years, really. I mean, I'm very fond. I mean, the short stories, I mean, certainly Barcelona Plates. I thought of any of you know Barcelona Plates, that the end, when I thought of the ending for Barcelona Plates, I just was so pleased, really, because it's a really, you know, it's amazing kind of twist, I think. I mean, I like to, you know, those
as well.
Is that the one with the Tour de France rider going up the hill?
No, that's called, I don't know what the hell that's called.
That's from the Dog Catcher.
Yeah, is it from the second collection? Yeah. So, I don't know. I like all of them, really, I think.
He likes all of them is the answer. All right, real quick, better be good. The guy behind you, please.
There's an exhibit going on Giacomo Matteotti, who is the great Italian anti-fascist who was in Parliament, murdered by Mussolini. It's happening at the Charing Cross Library. I thought you might be interested.
What do you think about that? Giacomo, doesn't he make clothes for fat people?
Somebody described, who's that cunt, that Irish cunt? The it's terrible, isn't it? What's he called? The one who does like the,
who?
He used to do Mock the Week.
John O'Brien.
We obviously edit this bit out of the podcast. Somebody described him as a thumb in a Giacomo blazer.
No, don't make me edit that out.
Well, we can probably take the Irish compit out and you can do that. I was not aware of that. It sounds very interesting. We've had it's been a theme, hasn't it, really? Mussolini, Gramsci, we've covered that. Was he, I don't know anything about him, really. But, was he like a, did you say he was an artist?
He was a member of Parliament.
An anti-fascist.
He was bumped off in 1924, but he had come to London a lot of times to counter the sort of fascism. Yeah. I realize this is not terribly funny stuff.
No. But what was his name? Giacomo what?
Matteotti.
Giacomo Matteotti.
All right, yeah.
Anti-fascist Italian.
Yes.
Okay, and also inventor of clothes for fat people.
Because I'm involved in the relaunch of the Tate Liverpool, I had a private viewer out of the paintings of Edward Burrough the other week. And they said to me, these are paintings that Edward Burrough did during the Spanish Civil War. And I was like, yeah. And then I found out he was on the other side.
All right, we have to call it there, please. Support the Patreon, patreon.com/AlexisHelpPodcast. This has been the Alexis Help Podcast. Take care. Bye-bye. Hit that music, Jimmy.
You've been listening to the Alexis Help Podcast. This show is produced and edited by Talal Karkuti. Music by Tarbush Records. Thanks to Audio Boom for hosting us. Please keep your emails coming in at alexiselpodcast@gmail.com. Goodbye.